And now we are live.
All right.
Live on tape. So here we are. We're starting session 3. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to sound less hosty this time, because even though I've heard the replay, we're going to get into this today. Because I have done such a horrible job of managing this thing. And you know what's terrible about it is, like, I would say our conversations are becoming the thing that I'm starting to really look forward to. And I'm like, man, we should start doing this more. Except that I haven't even put out the last episode. As you're hearing this one, the last one will have been put out by now. But know that you're hearing this one at least a week passed from when I wanted to put out the other one. And it's these things, when it comes to doing this show, that are really challenging and tasking, and are the things that are driving me mad. And so this is going to be a little interesting. I'm going to try not to do this too much, but I'm going to refer to the last one. I guess it doesn't matter, because the second one will be out before this one, so people will have heard it. So I'm okay referencing what we've talked about.
Exactly. And if it's out of sequence, who cares? This is your time. Who gives a care?
But, you know, it's last time we talked, I talked about the fact that I'm mired in this big project for work, and it's kind of official now that we're cutting over. But just to put it into context as to why my time has been so chewed up lately, we are moving our entire reporting system for the company out of our current environment. Which is a good tool. We're not leaving because the tool is bad. The tool just doesn't allow us to do what we want to do as a company. And so between myself and our company controller, we have moved away from that environment to an entirely new one, which is in Salesforce and uses a product called Power BI for the data analytics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the controller and I are literally building this thing from the ground up. And it's taking almost a decade's worth of data, mm-hmm, and migrating it from one system to another. And it's a lot. And, mm-hmm, and this week alone, I have spent at least 3 days up until 4 o'clock in the morning just chasing things down. Like, you know, when things don't add up, and it, you know, we're talking about, you know, sales and dollars and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the data's there. It's just the way that we have to calculate it.
Yes.
Is challenging. So literally that has been consuming so much,
yeah,
of my time that it's prevented me from getting to this thing. And you know me, Danielle, from our time together, like, yeah, I am a dog on a bone when it comes to getting something like this done, and I will not miss a deadline.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just, even though I say that and I'm a week behind on testing, but we're in a good spot.
Yeah. I mean, hey, data is at the core of any company.
It's everything. Yeah.
Data is everything. So the fact that you are investing this amount of time in that, Ben, is where you need to be. Because if your data's wrong, what is the term? Garbage in, garbage out. And
yeah.
I don't think any company can rely on bad data. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? No, not even acceptable. So take your time.
No, yeah. And that's, you know, I think one of the things that I was trained for, you know, so my time at Coca-Cola, it was great training. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think if you come out of that environment, where you're working with senior executives in that organization, there's an expectation to deliver. And there is for any company. Like, Coke isn't unique in that regard, right? But there's an expectation to deliver.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know how many times this has maybe happened to you, but I've been on the opposite side of the table when something goes wrong and you're expected to have answers and you've got to explain.
Yes. Yes. Creatively explain what the heck happened.
It's not a good feeling when projects, you know, make a left turn. You know, you learn from that. And, I will say that, you know, those are really valuable lessons that I carry forward. And, you know, last session we were talking about that fear of failure.
Yes.
You know, it kind of comes from being conditioned in an environment where there's an opportunity for error, but the tolerances are very tight.
Yes.
And so, you know, you get that. Those are kind of the things that even those lessons into that environment carry over, mm-hmm. even in things that are not work related.
Right.
And it's a weird kind of life conditioning that you get when you go down that path of being constantly held to measure, and you have, I mean, there's no such thing as failure. And it, you know, I know I'm going off on a tangent here. I just feel like, you know, kind of talking about this, but when I teach, and it's so sometimes challenging to switch gears from being that driven, hit your deadlines, don't be late, when you're kind of conditioned to that environment, and then you go into a classroom, and you know, in academia, they're like, work with students, you know, be understanding, be tolerant. And I'm just right. like,
no,
it's hard. It is hard to do that because, yeah. you know, I would oftentimes tell students, like, you know, be glad it's just a point deduction on a paper, because in corporate America, when you're late on that something, if you miss a deadline, deal. If you miss a deadline, you could lose a contract. You yes. could lose your job. You could lose your livelihood. You could, you know, you can make really tremendous errors yes. that resonate,
yes.
you know, cascade out. And so, you know, and, you know, students sometimes are just like, oh, come on. But no, seriously, like, you can't be late. You can't. There's no room to fail.
That's right.
So anyway, I say all of that because I guess, you know, it's my conditioning.
Yes.
To feel that fear of not hitting your deadline and not getting it right.
So it sounds like, Ben, you could be at this point learning a few things about yourself through these. This is now our third session. But that's a huge epiphany that you just shared. Like, huh, okay, this is where it's coming from, this fear of yeah. failure.
Yeah, you know, it's, I will say, though, it's probably not, okay, yes, some of it is my corporate conditioning.
Yes.
I think some of it, too, is just, you know, kind of my journey to where yeah. I'm at, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would say, you know, I kind of feel like it's a bit of an underdog's journey, because I don't think I was ever voted most likely to do anything. If if the phrase was most likely to, the ending of that phrase would have never been anything prosperous or you know, great.
Yeah, so if we go back to your middle school or high school yearbooks, we probably won't see you on those first 10 pages is what you're saying.
Because I wasn't there.
Yeah.
because I honestly, no, I'm not kidding you when I say that. Like most, there may be, somebody may have a freshman yearbook with my picture in it, but okay, there's nothing past that. That I think has a picture of me in it. Even though I got through high school, I ended up testing out as a junior.
Oh, but, wow.
Yeah, no, I always say, I mean, I passed all my classes on the way to my car.
Oh, that says so much.
I was not a stellar high school student. Yet, here I am with a PhD in teaching college.
Exactly. You know, I wish you had like a little button that says, ding, there's an insight for you right there. You know, don't be a scholar, folks. Don't get me wrong. I mean, by all means, do what's best for you. But when I look at my degrees, and I'm sure if you're looking at yours, Ben, it doesn't have your transcripts on it. It just says you made it.
Well, right? No, it doesn't. My transcripts actually aren't that bad, but and when I say not bad, I mean, I'm trying to think, 3.8 for my PhD.
So, okay.
You know, not horrible.
Not at all.
but, you know, the thing about that is, and here's the funny thing, I don't know where my PhD diploma is. I lost it.
Okay. Are you serious?
I swear. Somehow, I don't know where it's at. So somebody's got a PhD with my name on it, but it ain't me.
All right. So anyone out there impersonating Ben, Dr. Ben almost, please come forward. My goodness. We got to find that, man. That's a huge accomplishment.
Well, it is. But, you know, it doesn't, you know, the accomplishment is burned in me.
Yeah.
The decoration is just for everyone else to look at.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is, you know, the hours and the time and the process and everything else, there's no taking that away.
Yeah.
So I'm not a thingsy kind of person that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I gosh, if you ask me to find any of my diplomas, I don't know where they're at.
Well,
I mean, the transcripts are available if you want them.
That's right. It can be searched and tracked down, right?
Yeah, I think I still have my. I think I have my undergrad, but I'd have to seriously put in some look for my others.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's good to hear that you had some reflection time, and to think about sort of where you are and how you've been conditioned, right? Through your corporate and just not just your corporate experience, just your experience period, the Ben experience.
Yeah.
It's totality, right?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, it's probably, it's funny because now that I'm on this, kind of back end of getting all of this stuff done. And I mentioned in the last episode, I've got about another 2 or 3 weeks of heavy lifting and it's been 2 weeks.
Yep.
I feel, especially today, in comparison to the episode that folks may have previously heard, like I can tell even my tone and my engagement is just so much different.
Yes,
than it was last time.
Your energy is different. I can definitely see a difference just 1 week.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is good. It seemed like a load, somewhat of a load is off your shoulders.
Yeah, it's there's more work to come, but I will say when I'm in the thick of it from trying to like just map data and make things right and bring stuff together. It's just
so I want to explore something for a minute. Let's go back to last week, and I could have tried to read you I knew something was going on with you. What was going on? Were you trying to just figure things out? It was uncertainty. Like what was going on?
So, a couple things actually. So, you know, the work, yes. New semester starting and that crunch of getting classrooms set up, things deployed, students hammering you with questions, you know, getting started, which is, you know, that's what I'm here for. Like that's part of what I need to do to help folks. And then, I also, you know, personal news. So, you know, my mom wasn't doing well at the time. So that was another thing that was, you know, kind of weighing heavy on my head. And, you know, she's getting better, but, you know, unfortunately she's kind of, in this, stage, with her health that we're just going to constantly kind of having these reoccurring episodes of things. And so it's tough, you know, yeah. First of all, not tough on me. like for me, there's just this, emotionally, you yeah. know, you process it.
Yeah.
Who it's the most challenging for are my family who are, cross country in California, who are, you know, taking care of her and, you know, working with her, and my dad who's, you know, she's living with my sister right now just so she can, you know, get better and my sister can, you know, give her a little bit more time and attention. But, you know, my sister also has a very busy life and, her husband has a very busy life. So like they're, believe me, tough on me, not a thing. They're the ones who are really, putting in a lot of the hard effort.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, you know, life the tsunami happening. Of things all coming together.
Yeah, life is happening. So when life happens and you have this tsunami of things,
yeah,
you know, it's there. What happens to Ben? Like mentally, is it?
Oh, I go into, it's, so first, like my emotional, response to things like this, I'm never the kind of person who like I get quiet and I get focused on what I'm thinking about, and I tend to like just disengage, but definitely not go out of my way to you know, like I'm not a let's go talk about our feelings you know kind of I just, you know, kind of hunker down and think through it and like try and it's terrible. Like I go into strategy mode and I just like, process all the variables in my head.
So you go inward.
Definitely.
And you strategize all in your head in the midst of all of this thing, these things going on. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can definitely see how that showed up last week.
Yeah. And it's not, I tend to not be, I guess I'm kind of quiet.
Yeah.
Drives my wife nuts.
Here we are. Then last week here, we had a coaching session where I was asking you a bunch of questions and you didn't want to be quiet probably, or you did want to be quiet. So I appreciate you even staying the course in the midst of all of that chaos.
Well, you have to, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's life is never going to present things the way that you want it to. You have to take what comes and, you know, it's not the adversity, it's how you respond to it that matters.
Absolutely. So when you think about last week in terms of, you know, your next stage of growth, what's one thing or two, what you name the number, that you learned about yourself that you want to do differently?
You know what? Here's something that's very interesting I think about this stuff. Boy, you know, it's funny, like, oh, Ben, do you need a coach? No, I'm good. And now I find myself like, every time we talk, I'm like, I marinate on this stuff like for weeks, it seems. But I will say there is a, man, are you vulnerable? The fact that we're like there, I question, Bain, are you doing a smart thing by just putting this out there in the world for all the world to hear? But I gotta feel like there's some good that's gonna come out of this. Like somebody's gonna hear this, and it's going to benefit. I say that as if it's not benefiting me. I think that it is. But man, there's a level of vulnerability, yeah. And it's personally, yeah, I mean, it's a little scary.
Because if your natural tendency is to go inward and figure it out on your own and strategize and whiteboard in your head, and then here you come and being vulnerable and talking about that process, heck yeah. I mean, that's like, wow.
Well, the other thing too is that, okay, so, you know, we grew up in a brand company, and you don't tarnish the brand, maintain the integrity and the reputation of the brand at all times. And so, you know, when I think about like the side of myself that I put out there to the people that I work with and to students and to faculty and things like that, like this is not the side that people see of me in those environments, because I am always very good about, like, I am there to do this task, and that's what I'm going to focus on doing. And so you're going to get that me there who's focused on doing that thing, because that's what you're getting paid for. Like, you're not getting paid for me to go and theorize and pontificate about crap. You're paying for me to get things done for you. And so that's what I'm going to do.
That's right.
So this is really different, and this is even different than the show, because the show is all about like bringing information and interesting topics to people who want to listen to them. What we're doing here, this is a deeper individual kind of level thing. And, it's weird.
Well, you know, here's the thing. And I thought about,
You still get to be on your thing, right? So,
like, yeah, I mean, hey, I'm here for you.
I know you are.
And don't think that I don't go through a journey with you, right? Because I do. As a coach, you know, we cannot not feel and connect with the person we're coaching, and it not influence our thinking, like, I wonder if I do that, right? So we're human. But where I was going with that, Ben, is, you know, you were for the past week, I didn't get this show posted. I didn't get it posted. But you just shared, like, you have actually learned something about yourself this week. To me, that's the win, not a post. Now, if session two never gets posted, guess what? Session two doesn't get posted.
It'll get posted. That's
I know it will, because you're an achiever and you're going to make it happen. But the point here is the learning is in this experience that you're having. And so, you know, your hope is that people learn from this, learn that you stay connected to the why. And the why is for you to go through this journey to find some things out about Ben. And then everything else is posting and going live and sharing. That's great.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is, you know, the process that one goes through to just reflect on things, you know, it's not a lot of the things that we've kind of touched on are things that you keep in your head and you don't necessarily, you know, put it out there to the world, if you will.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing too, like, you know, part of when I talk about like the fear and the weirdness of it all is that you're allowing people to now make commentary on your own kind of inner workings. And that is not advisable for a lot of people. And the reason I say that is because I'll be honest with you, I care deeply about the people closest to me, what they think. I'm not a bit, I'm not overly concerned beyond that. I only say that, and it's not that I don't want to, I don't want people to get that confused with the, it's not an I don't give a shit attitude. I do. But I'm not going to work hard to impress you. Like I know who I need to, I know who I need to impress, and they don't need me to impress them.
Absolutely. You know, here's how I picture this for those who are visual. You know, you're in a theater and you're on stage and you're doing your best stand up, you know, comedic, whatever you do, Ben. I'm not saying you're a comedian, but let's just say you are for this story.
I think I am, but and there nobody are some else people does. In the front.
Well, hey, there's somebody in your front row.
Right.
In many cases, or in the orchestra, right? You're actually performing for those folks. Those are your people in the front row. Now, there are others who are probably in the lobby because they didn't buy a ticket. They're just trying to hear you, or they're in a mezzanine or in a balcony. Well, thanks for coming. But you're really looking at those folks that you can make eye contact with. And those are the people you care about. And that's how I envision this. And same for me. That's my audience. Those people I can make eye contact, that can see the sweat and the blood and the tears. Yes, that's my front row I'm working with.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's, I don't, again, I mean, it's not that I don't care, but I'm not overly concerned.
You care.
You know, I'm not overly concerned about whether or not, you know, I don't know, along the way you meet people, you're not everybody's a fan of you. I don't care about winning people over. Like, I'm going to continue being me. We either get along or we don't. Either way, okay.
So I'm putting my coaching hat on back on.
Okay.
This is transformative, because if I go back to our first session to now, you did not say that our first session.
That's weird. There was reference. I've always felt it.
But I think you probably said it, but there were more comments on, well, people don't get me, people don't get me, people don't understand me, people don't get me, right? Which one would think, oh, well, he really cares about what people think.
Yeah, that's true. That does really,
right?
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing now is, to hell with it. I have this group. Well, not to hell. Let me clarify. I am concerned by my brand and to those who are consuming my brand, but there are few who I am very in tune and connected to that I do care about other things outside of just the brand.
Yes. And, you know, as I think about it, so session one was really... I think I'm trying to protect my base, right? So, I want to put it out there that I'm doing this thing that is a little offbeat and a little, it's a little bit of an expose, and, I don't want you to get the wrong impression. And I think that was my attempt at putting that out there and saying, I know this is weird, and what is the reason for doing this? What, like, why do this? That's so. I mean, I could just imagine there are people who know me and are, you know, are seeing this thing, and I put it out there on social media, and I'm promoting it. And it's like, you know, yeah, take a listen to this, and there's got to be people saying, "What the hell are you doing? Why?" Why would you?
And so, and there's some people out there that are probably saying thank you.
they're I'm hoping. So that's when when I'm putting that out there of people don't get me, that's kind of what I'm saying is like, I do these kind of wacky things sometimes, that it's always well intended, but it's a little off the beaten path. But here's the thing. You know, it's kind of a core value of mine to embrace those things, to embrace those things that are outside of the norm, that are the outliers. I mentioned earlier that, you know, if you looked up the most likely statement, you know, for me, like I've always been kind of this underdog, and I've been an underdog because I've tended to be an outlier, a little left or right of center, and always questioning the mainstream and always questioning the norm.
Yeah.
And I have, I don't want to change that because it is that allows me to have a perspective on things that I think is far different than other folks.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that when I say that people don't, you know, get that or understand that, I think conformists don't understand that. I'm not a conformist. I like to, you know, I would say this. I would never be able to get all of my friends together in one room because they would not get along. I get along with them.
Yeah.
But they would not get along with each other.
Because they're, let me guess, if I may, they're all different.
They're a variety of people. Some of them are mainstream kind of followers and conformists, and some of them are far to the right, and some of them are far to the left.
Yeah.
And I appreciate all the people who I've come to know because that's what makes life interesting.
To me.
Like, you know, one of my kind of pet sayings is that like every genius is a little bit crazy.
Like, and actually, Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book about people like you called Outliers.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know if it was about people like me.
You just said you were your core value being an outlier.
Yeah, but when I think of those outliers, I mean, those outliers are like, you know, significant movers and shakers.
Time out. And you're not?
I don't feel like I am, no.
Oh, Ben.
I feel like I just plow through things.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to start this whole session over just on that topic. Are you serious?
I do what I need to do, but I don't, like, do it because, I don't know. You ever see those things? You see this a lot, like, executive coaching. They talk about like we're gonna do like
mind melding.
I think of Star Trek when I think of that, but like, you know, mastermind sessions.
Yes
that's just so hokey to me. It's like, you know, mastermind, come on, get off yourself. Like, just be a regular person, you know, and have your wits about you, but you don't self-glorify into the, I focus more on what needs to get done, the purpose of doing it, driving towards it, but I don't sit there and, inflate my ego by,
by calling yourself a genius.
Yeah, because there's a lot of smart. Here's the thing. This is the other thing too. So that to me is very pompous and arrogant. I appreciate people who have wisdom, who, you know, smart, who bring things to the table. But I guess what I don't like about it is the fact that really smart, insightful, borderline genius people don't always come from corporate America, from highly regarded, you know, universities and academic institutions. Some of these people are, you know, painting your house. Some of these people are, you know, out there, you know, turning a wrench. You know, you can meet amazing, smart, insightful people. There's a guy on YouTube that I watch, The Uneducated Economist. My brother-in-law turned me on to this guy. And, you know, he works in the lumber industry.
Wow.
He's, you know, blue-collar guy, never went to college, has a reading disability. Dude is smart when it comes to just analyzing the trends of the economy. Mm-hmm. And he constantly gets into these very interesting topics and, and, you know, theorizes about things that are happening, you know, in the U.S. and global economy. Now, normal people would pass this guy up on the street and not think a thing of it.
Right.
And so when I think of people, you know, I'm a mastermind, I came from this pedigree and I've got this, like knock it off. Like quit being an elitist jackass. That's what those things bring to the mind.
Yeah. Because you never know who that person you're standing next to might be.
Absolutely.
Or they are, or who they are. Right. Because they're not, and especially this guy that's what undereducated economist, he's not conditioned to be like most or like many who've been conditioned to be one way, one dimensional.
Yeah. And like I have an appreciation for that. But then again, you know, in my career, I've come across some very polished, high profile people that I am just like, wow, you know? So what I'm saying is that, but that sense of wow goes both ways. Like you know.
But it's not what they do, Ben. I think it's who they are at the core.
Yeah, but here's the thing, like, well, granted, the guy watching YouTube, he's getting more notoriety now that he's been, you know, putting content out there and things like that. But he was always that guy, but no one would have ever called him a mastermind. And that's terrible. And, you know, some of this maybe harkens back to I was sharing with you my own kind of high school journey. And, you know, yeah, just constantly being discounted because of your look, your approach, your manner, your, you know, like people pass up, I think, some very wise people in pursuit of this thing that has been implanted in their head as to what a successful, smart person is supposed to look and act like.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we all have our own vision of what success looks like, which is why, you know, from my perspective, it's so important to pause and check yourself, which is, you know, what this platform is and other things that you're doing and that, you know, that are happening. Because checking yourself just kind of brings you back to say, okay, who am I really? Because you're not your job, right? That's what you do. But really, at your core, who are you? And I appreciate you sharing that, Ben, because I think really you're on that journey, or have been. Like, who is Ben?
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, you say what you said about, you know, you're not what you do. Me personally, I've tried to make, especially over the last probably, 10 years or so. I've tried to make what I do who I am. Here's why. I don't ever want to feel like I'm working. I just want to feel like I'm having a good time and enjoying what I'm doing. And if what you are doing to you know, create your livelihood, if it feels like work, you're not enjoying it. If it feels like a chore, if it feels like it's something to be avoided.
Yeah.
If you're happy about Friday, actually, I put it this way. If you love Thursdays and dread Sunday, change what the hell you're doing, because you're doing the wrong thing, and life is too short to be in a bad relationship.
Yeah. I mean, but could we explore that in the inverse? So you said that you find what you, let me rephrase that. You said that you go after what you do to make who you are, or vice versa?
So I've found I do the things that I enjoy doing so that it doesn't feel like work.
Okay.
I mentioned this before, like, I get to do the things that I do. I don't, you know, it's not a have to do. It's an honor for me. It's a pleasure. I enjoy it. To be asked to teach a class. Mm-hmm. Like, that is, I'm humbled by that. Mm-hmm. From the kid who was least likely to do anything. I am humbled by when, like, a student comes back and says, you know, thank you. You know, I really enjoyed this class, or it was one of the best classes, or, you know, give me like that kind of stuff is cool. I usually keep, every once in a while I post stuff like that, like something fun, that somebody said to me, I'll post it on social media. But a lot of it I don't. And I know you asked me that question a while back, like, you know, who do you think you influence? And I said, no one.
Oh, you remember that.
I do. And be, you know, yeah, okay. Truthfully, certainly you do influence people, but that's not why I do it. I'm not like living mm-hmm. for that. I do it because I generally want to see people do better.
Yeah.
And have more and create wealth, safety, and security for them and their families. Like, that's how we turn a lot of things around.
Yeah.
But I love teaching, right? So I've done it constantly nonstop for 15 years. But I also love the business stuff.
Yeah.
But I like working for places where I'm appreciated.
Yeah.
Before we got on, I told you, I said, you know me, I'm not one to be managed. I hate being managed. I really do. Yeah. I like collaborating.
Yes.
I like working with people. I like picking up on energy. I like people giving me challenging tasks and supporting me in my effort to accomplish them.
Yes.
But I don't like to be managed. I don't like to feel confined. I don't like to feel like what I'm doing is not appreciated. And so when I get that, I'm like, it ain't for me.
But here's what, and I wish I, again, have that little ding insightful button or something. You have turned your core values into what you do every day.
Yeah, you have to. You have
and
to.
And for some people, they say, oh, I can't do that. Oh, yeah, you can.
You can, but I'll tell you what, it sucks trying to get there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like,
why does it tell people why that sucks?
Because, I had to go backward to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in kind of my own story, for me, I chose a path and I started going down that path, and it was a lucrative path. But then I started to get to where I didn't like the path, but it was a lucrative path. And it's like, you know, you know, I felt like I lost my own self-identity.
Yeah.
You know? I felt like I exchanged so many things that I value for something that was monetary.
Yeah.
And so taking a different turn.
Yeah.
You know, I made a very conscious effort And I used to always say, like, don't do things for the money. Do it for the opportunity. The money will come. If you do it for the opportunity and you know it's right for you and you kick ass at it, like, the money's going to come. So just do what is necessary. And so, I got to a point in my life where I did that and it sucked.
And now, you know, right? That was a key learning. Okay. Don't do that again.
Well, it was, when I say it sucked, what I mean is that, like, when you're challenged by things that threaten your security and threaten mm-hmm. your comfort, mm-hmm. Man, it's tough. Mm-hmm. It's tough. Mm-hmm. But I also made the conscious effort of not going to go back into a circumstance where I feel like I'm going down that path again, right? So in my mind, I'm like, the money will come. Focus on the things you enjoy. Do the things you want. Make those around you, you know, happy, and the rest will fall in place.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And it's so easy to say, and in retrospect, especially, like, so now I'm in the stage of doing it. But getting to the stage of doing it, oh man, it's tough. And you know, it's so easy to sit back and tell people, oh, just follow your passion, follow your dreams, you know, do what you love. And man, when I tell you, when you're hammering away trying to get there, none of that shit it doesn't matter.
Like, especially people, when you're threatened.
Oh my God. When people will tell you that and you're like, yeah, easy for you to say, but I'm the one here, you know, at the bottom of the hill and all the shit's rolling downhill.
Exactly. Like,
you know, so I will just tell folks, like, and by the way, I'm still not, going back to what we talked about before, I'm never there and I'm never going to be there. And even though I'm very content where I'm at, and I will continue to build upon positively, doesn't mean that things won't go wrong. It doesn't mean that we, you know, that the challenges are over.
Right.
Now you got to bust your ass twice as hard to hold on to it.
But I think the beauty in there, though, Ben, is self-awareness. And people use that term a lot and use it loosely. Oh, yeah, you know, you need to go and be self-aware. No, do you really know what that means? And that means going out, testing, trying, failing.
Mm.
Testing, trying, failing, learning, growing, test again. Oh, that didn't work. Test again, right? And that takes grit. That takes resilience, because it's so easy to say, oops, I tried that. It didn't work. I got to go this way because I have bills to pay, car note. Nope. And that's okay, right? But that comes with sacrifice, what you've done. And that's no small feat at all.
Yeah, I mean, and some of that sacrifice, by the way, so like when I went to go work in the wine industry, Georgia's got a little bit of a wine industry, but it's nothing like Napa.
Not at all. I was there last week, not at all.
So when I made the move to go work in the wine industry, it meant selling your house in a down economy, taking a hit on that. Moving to an area that was 20% plus more than where you were used to living, making less money than you were used to making, completely uprooting your family and putting them in an area where, you know, it was not a fit for them. There was a lot of challenges.
And, but what was your why in that, Ben?
There was this burning sensation I had inside that, you know, this was going to work out for the better. And I will say that, first year or two, that was not, but you talk about just having to, like, stay on something. because there were so many signs saying no. You know, this is not for the better. Mm-hmm. And then, but just sticking to it, and, you know, met some amazing people in California, made some new kind of longer, long lasting friendships with folks out there. You know, but like not being able to own a house was difficult for somebody who bought their first house at 22 years old. Right. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, struggling, you know, financially, because you're living in this really expensive area, and just trying to, you know, make it. And especially, I think the toughest was like that first, the first year, because you're, everything's new. Mm-hmm. Everything's so much more expensive. You know, by the time I left, things were, you know, settling out, but man, it's, so what was a gain? Opportunity to work in a new industry, okay. Opportunity to meet some amazing people. Like my first job in the wine industry, I got, I worked for a company called Folio Fine Wine Estates. Mm-hmm. Many people might not have heard of Folio Fine Wine Estates. But you'll know the name of the person who owns and runs it. A guy by the name of Michael Mondavi.
Mm-hmm. Who, you know, just a small family, you know.
son of Robert Mondavi.
Oh, yeah, just a small name.
Small, yeah, just like California wine family, yeah. That's pretty.
Just kind of see it on a Napa tour. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just, you know, but, and, you know, the Mondavi family is, they were just such nice, amazing people. Michael is, that guy is just so cool. Mm-hmm. And all the people at Folio, were great. I mean, you know, it was a great experience and transition, you know, to move over. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, you had the opportunity to meet some really neat people and just get introduced into this industry that is so much different than soda. Oh my gosh. And so fun. Like, you know, it's just a really good, fun industry. And then I had the opportunity to work with, so prior to moving to California, I'd only worked for for-profit colleges or a for-profit college. And I moved to California, and I worked for two community colleges, and they're private colleges, but they're also nonprofit. So all of the institutions I worked for out there, like four different colleges out there, all nonprofit organizations. Mm-hmm. And I really grew, I think, academically, because in the teaching model that I was a part of, you don't pick your material, you don't develop mm-hmm. your class, you're given a fixed set of things and you're told to just go facilitate it, right?
Oh, wow. Okay. That's different. That's a different model.
Yeah. So being in a, where they're like, you pick your textbook, you develop your syllabus, you lay out your entire courses, like that was, that I'd gotten a little bit of that, like a little bit, mm-hmm. but when you go into that side of things, I just learned more about academia. Yeah. And I think I grew as a professor. And so now that I'm back here in Georgia, like I've got all of that experience, exposure, change. I think there are things that I got in that, transition that I never would have gotten staying here. You know, and mm-hmm. and so I look at that whole transition as a tremendous gift for opportunity. Beat the hell out of me, tremendous struggle.
Yeah.
but also like just, you know, to just be amongst people who appreciate what you do.
Yeah. And so you've gone through a significant amount of change and transition, you know, not just with your career, but just your moves and with your family.
Yeah.
So now what?
Oh, what's next?
Yeah.
Well, so I work the winery that I'm with right now, you know, and I say that not as a short-term statement. Like, I have found a very wonderful place to be, and love what we do, love the people. Mm-hmm. Leadership is amazing. All the people I get the chance to work with are great. And I'm, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, do we all like it? Not every, it's not lovey-dovey every single day. I mean, we have our challenges, as any company does, but yeah. there's a level of respect and communication and gratitude, I think, across everything that makes, what we do so fun. And, the founder of the company is just amazing. The president, who I report to directly, is, you know, he is an Adrian. We've talked about Adrian a few mm-hmm. times. He's an Adrian like manager, like just,
oh yeah. Well, then you're in good hands.
Yeah. You know, and he has standards, and he, you know, definitely wants you to work and to stretch, but, you know, is also very, appreciative and, you know, has a lot of gratitude for the things that we do. So it's just being part of this team where we've been around for 30 years, and I feel like we are just getting started on where we're going as a company. And yeah. So to be able to be part of that journey is just amazing. Yeah. The couple institutions that I teach for, like, academia is going through some challenges right now. Mm. COVID is really, like, you know, it's really kind of messed up our world a little bit. Benefit for me, everything went online.
Right. So, higher learning period right now has just been, that world has been rocked.
It has, but you know, the institutions I work for are great. I mean, you know, we're challenged, but you know, I'm still being presented with new opportunities that are giving me an opportunity to grow and learn. So that is, that stuff is fun. And, you know, I'm trying to incorporate all of that into this show that I'm also working on developing. So I continue to do some small business consulting advising, but nothing that's going to take me away from my two primary things.
Yeah.
But my recreational love right now, my recreational thing that I really want to chase after is the show.
Yeah.
Is just, so in these couple episodes that we've done with this, you know, like, I've got a journey. Like, I've met a mm-hmm. lot of people along that journey. Mm-hmm. And I've learned a lot of things. And I mentioned this before that, you know, from a Central California town, where our biggest claims to fame are Buck Owens and oil and agriculture. You know, but that's kind of where my family is rooted.
Yeah.
And so, when I think about, you know, the kid that started off in that, you know, dusty little small town, and then, like, moving up to the Bay Area, moving out here to Atlanta, and how I got into working with Coca-Cola, how I managed to get into a role where I was doing all this work for all these amazing companies, and then transitioning into the wine industry and all the things that I've, you know, had the opportunity to do there and the people that I've met there. And then in academia, the people that I've had the chance to work with and teach with, and you remember, Brent, who used to work at University mm-hmm. of Phoenix with,
yep.
like 14 degrees. The guy was like insane.
I'm still in awe of him.
I think he had like eight PhDs or something.
Right. Do you recognize that process? How did you do it that many times? Can I get one? I'll buy one degree for 200, Alex.
But yeah, he was, that guy was amazing. But like, you know, like there's a ton of people that I've worked with and taught with who just have these really incredible, you know, backgrounds and do some neat stuff. And so, I mean, that's the basis of me wanting to bring that kind of content out for people. I'm not an A-lister. Hell, I'm not even a D-lister show, right? I mean that from a celebrity notoriety standpoint.
Yeah.
But there's a ton of people out there who do amazing things, who are so incredibly smart, who run some amazing businesses that aren't getting the accolades.
Yeah.
Those are the stories that I want to explore. Those are the people that I want to talk about things with. And so that's kind of my push, my drive for what we're doing.
Well, I tell you, there's a couple of things you said today and I wrote them down, you know, because when we started this journey in the first session, you know, I asked like, who is your audience? Right. And you went through some stats and we did some things, but you said something today that, I think really hit home for me. And I wonder where it hits you. You said that you're an outlier, but you tend to question mainstream and the norm. And so now when I look back at some of your content, knowing this about you, and just hearing what you just said, you know, given that small guy, that underdog, that chance, the voice, the platform, hearing about some incredible people who you wouldn't even think were as smart as they are. Ah, is that the show?
It is. I think it is kind of a little bit. Yeah. Like shedding a light on people who don't often have the light shown upon them, or, you know, they're the people who you don't. I don't know. I think my drive for that is because I've always been kind of aware of that. Yeah. And I've never been too caught up in, you know, when people make statements like, well, they say, or, you know, this is what these people are doing. Like I've never been one to look at what's popular and go, I'm going to do that, or I want that, or I want to be that. I've always been kind of like, huh, all right, you guys go do that. I'm going to go find something else to do.
Yeah. You guys go over there. You normal people, you conformists.
And I say that, mind you, having worked for 20 years in a, you know, global brand company that's one of the most recognizable on the planet.
Yeah.
And you talk about mainstream, but you know, even within the mainstream, I always sought to be a little counter.
Yeah. And you were successful at that. I worked with you, Ben. I know that, but I think if you bring this full circle for this session, I would encourage you to really think back and listen to this, you know, this session again. There were some pretty key insights that came out of this today about one, who Ben is and what gets you excited, what you value, you know, your core value. To me, you articulated it, is being different, being an outlier, and then bringing light to those who are the same or almost the same or whatever. That is a huge insight that I'm taking away about Ben today, which is new. This is new.
Wow. That's interesting. You know, what's weird is I do wonder, like, how many, I try to just be who I am, mm-hmm. but it is interesting that I've known you for so long and you're learning like things about me. And I was like, huh, I feel like that's always been out there, but if you're just learning it, okay, cool.
No, you know, I don't ever try to assume anything. until I actually hear someone say it, because it's gotten me in trouble, my assumptions. I could assume that, but to hear you say it so, just so clear and precise, and your energy behind it tells me this is Ben, this is who you are. And there are so many people out there who need a platform to be able to say, yeah, I'm pretty cool too. Even though I might be painting buildings and washing windows, don't underestimate this person.
Let me tell you something. Yeah, it really does bother me to see people get dismissed that way. Mm. It bothers me to see people who buy into this notion that if you don't have a degree, that somehow you have missed something, you know, in opening your potential and stuff like that. There's a ton of people I know without a degree or some of the smartest people I know. So
go after it, man.
Yeah.
Go after it. I'm here for it.
So, but, and by the way, a lot of people who I know who have advanced degrees who are not the most intellectually impressive people.
You know why? Because a lot of people are just checking that box.
Yeah.
And not checking into the experience.
No. They've it's like, great, you have a degree.
Woo! And I bet you they can find it too, Ben.
They probably can. In fact, I don't want to say, I'm going to say this and then people are going to hate me for saying it. And I'm going to say, I don't mean for it to be offensive, but it's still going to offend people. And for that,
get
I do
to it, Ben. Chop, chop.
I do apologize, but when people get so into like putting all their accomplishments all over the wall or like surrounding them with things like that, I'm just not that kind of person. And oftentimes when I walk into a room and if I see that a person has just surrounded themselves with their own awards and accolades, I'm just like, I'm a little apprehensive. I kind of like wonder what I'm about to get into. And just because, you know, it's going to be they're going to love to talk about themselves.
Well, hey, it's an insight. You walk into a room and all of their degrees are all over. That's a data point. And that point is make time for them to talk about themselves potentially, or be someone who's going to deliver some results.
Yeah. They're going to want to hear a lot about what they have to say.
Yeah.
As I just spent an hour talking just about me.
Because this is your thing and that's the beauty. A coach is, I'm here and prepared to hold space for you.
I know. It's funny that I sit there and comment on people like that. And then who's the jackass who's putting his own story out there for the world to hear?
We all have choices, Ben. We all have choices to listen or not.
Oh, it's just so hypocritical.
I doubt it. All right, there you go with that self-talk again.
Well, I can't.
You're doing so well.
I do judge myself as I judge others.
We'll get there. We'll get there, folks. We'll get there.
All right. Well, Danielle, I know I've taken up a lot of your time today, and I appreciate your time. But we got started a little late, and I know I'm probably keeping you from other things.
Well, I appreciate you, Ben. I appreciate just this dialogue, the energy you brought to this session does not go unnoticed at all. I am celebrating where you are compared to, and that's why I love this thing I do. I love coaching because just like you like to see people grow, I like to see the growth through conversation. And sometimes people just need space. Just to just get it out, talk it out, and not be judged, not be, given advice, just hold space. So yeah. I appreciate the platform and I appreciate your growth and celebrate your growth.
Well, awesome. I thank you for that. I also thank you for taking the time to do this.
Of course. I'm committed.
I think it's fun. I'm learning a lot. And I hope those who are listening are learning about what coaching can be like.
Yes.
And by the way, too, I'm going to say this as we close. it doesn't always have to be like this. I mean, I'm the kind of person who I'm going to kind of put it out there, and maybe I overexpose, I don't know, but you don't, you know, it's, I will say, Danielle, sometimes I feel like, is this a therapy session or is this? And I, you know,
coaching is not therapy.
Exactly. And that's what I want. that's what I want to make sure that we, that we get to, because the other thing is I don't want, I know I've put a couple things out there, and I this is not, it isn't therapy. I mean, you know, but it's also part of the getting to know in this environment and using that as a catalyst to move forward. So,
And I would just tell your listeners, Ben, a coach coaches functional people to do functional things. A therapist, a psychiatrist, psychotherapist, they're working with dysfunction to get them functional. Well, you are a functional person. And if you're not, you're playing it off pretty well.
that's awesome. But no, it's a very important distinction. Like these are not clinical things. And so I don't want people to get into this impression that, you know, somehow this is how it is.
Absolutely.
But thank you again, Danielle, for all of your time. And folks, we will be back in a little bit with another session, and very much looking forward to it. So
absolutely, Ben. Same here.
All right. Have a good one. Everyone. We'll see you next time.
Yes, we will.